Hey, this is Engineer Eric from the Jimmy Doan Show. You're listening to part two of our November 25th podcast. If anything sounds a little funny to you, just remember that I wasn't there during the recording of the show. No biggie. Just covering my bases. Enjoy the show.
So, okay, moving on. Again, with the pollution thing, this is a big conference on warming. I thought this was fascinating. I love this article. It says, the headline is, Big Conference on Warming Ends, Achieving Modest Results. It actually achieved nothing, I can tell you that. This was in Nairobi. You know, I'm thinking to myself.
In a central,
populated area. In the place where all the pollution is, let's go to Nairobi.
Right.
In Kenya. The yearly United Nations. I mean, this is so typical of people that are useless. These people are tits on a bull if there ever was. The yearly United Nations conference, they do this every year, conference on climate change ended Friday with only modest results after delegates failed to establish a timetable for future cuts on pollution linked to global warming. Okay, fine. The two persistent problems were the American reluctance to agree on any mandatory emissions limits and increased stubbornness by China and India, two of the world's, it says here in this article, I thought it was interesting, two of the world's fastest growing polluters, which face no penalties under the Kyoto Agreement for all the heat-trapping gases they pump to the atmosphere. Now, what this means is they all want the United States, who's supposedly accounting for one-fifth of the pollution, but that's going to be all over here in about a week. I mean, the Chinese and the Indians, with 2 billion people between them, and we only got 300 million, hello.
Yeah, as soon as all the people get cars.
Well, that's, and I've got another article on that here, which that is, it's all ducted. Everything in the Jimmy Doan Show, it's, believe it or not, it is linked. It may not seem so, because Jimmy is sometimes out on a branch when he shouldn't be. The deal is, I thought this was interesting, that tells you so much about the way these things work. 6,000 participants to this convocation or whatever in Nairobi. I mean, give me a break.
6,000 people.
6,000 people showed up to talk about global warming. Now, you know, this is so typical of government-type actions, especially the U.N., Even the United States doesn't go that crazy when they put together a blue ribbon commission.
Right.
That they're going to throw in the trash. I mean, 6,000 people. Give me a break. All paid for by their various governments, their nonprofit NGOs, whatever you want to call it. They all show up here in Nairobi.
Teams of people.
Yeah, but in Nairobi, what is in Nairobi? I mean, do a quick Google search on escort service in Nairobi. See what you find. I don't know what the deal is.
Got to be something there.
Got to be something there. I don't know. Lion, rugs, something, go hunting. The deal is that it all boils down to, they essentially, what this conference decided was they're going to get ready to get ready. They voted on some rules for the next conference. That's what they got done. Seriously, that is exactly what they got done. They voted on some rules for the next conference.
We're going to expand it to 60,000.
Right, exactly. We need to get some more input. More input. We need to get some more people in here. And of course, it reminds me to some extent of one of the objections that I have to CAFTA and NAFTA. I'm all for free trade, but I've always said I can write a free trade agreement in three paragraphs.
Right.
Not when you have 6,000 pages, like you have 6,000 people. Mischief will abound.
Well, it's just going to be a selective system where you've got some people who are earmarked for driving their trucks straight through, and other people have to go through all the regulation borders and weigh-ins and everything. And it's going to select winners and losers.
It's select winners and losers.
There's going to be lobbyists up there to make sure that their company gets to be the winner, and those are going to be the ones that get promoted.
That's right. Well, the thing that I guess one of the things that I see in this particular type of stuff that the UN does is, I mean, let's face it, the UN really doesn't have any power.
No.
The only thing they can do is try and get, I guess, public opinion or something. So when you have 6,000 participants, maybe it's better than if you had 60. I mean, if it said the 60 top and most important people in the world went to this conference, I mean, who would really care? But 6,000, minor functionaries, I guess, carry more weight.
Well,
they do certainly carry more weight.
They invited every country to send a team of representatives that represents their opinion about the idea and their experts and whatever, and they all gather together in these huts in Nairobi or whatever.
Exactly. Well, to continue on this article that tells you so much, the article tells you so much more than you really want to know. I take that back. This is the Lex Luthor thing, the gum wrapper, which we've talked about before. What is it? I would pull up the soundbite, and maybe Engineer Eric can put the soundbite in here where Lex makes the correct comment.
Some people can read War and Peace and come away thinking it's a simple adventure story. Others can read the ingredients on a chewing gum wrapper and unlock the secrets of the universe.
Letter from Barbara Boxer of California, Jeff Bingham of New York, and Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut said Democrats would push to pass binding restrictions on greenhouse gases starting in January when they take control of Congress. It, quote, if we are to leave our children a world that resembles the earth we inherited, we must act now.
Children.
That's right.
It's for the children.
I'm saying, I got a newsflash. Whether they do anything or not, even if they clamp down. Let me put it this way. If they clamp down, the earth is not going to be the same as what they think it's going to be. And even if they don't, there's nothing they can do to leave it the same. That's it. Central theme of the conference, reflecting its African site, was the importance of increasing aid to the world's poorest countries. Guess what? Here we are in Nairobi, and give us some money. I mean, that was the central theme. Many African communities are already feeling the effects of a shifting climate, from increased droughts, more desertification, and that doesn't mean they're leaving. They should be deserting the deserts. And spreading malaria, one of the continent's biggest killers.
I mean, get out of town.
Get out of town. Look, if it's a desert, what was the guy who used to scream off Sam Kinison?
Here's the problem. You see this? This is sand. Nothing grows here.
That's right. Go where the food is. You don't bring the food to them. So the deal is that but I love this. What happens
is, going to be 1,000 years from now? It's going to be sand.
That's right. So move. I mean, the market would move these people. It's very easily. Though delegates began to discuss the ins and outs of adaption of a fund to aid developing nations. This I love. An adaption of a fund to aid developing nations. Key decisions for the fund were postponed until next year. World Bank economists estimate it would cost billions of dollars to help the developing world deal with climate change. But right now, the adaption fund stands at $3 million. I mean,
only got 1,000 times to go. Only got 100,000% to increase by.
Well, in a sign of progress, the conference organized said one of the biggest achievements this year was an agreeing to review the Kyoto Protocol next year. that's the big achievement. They voted on what to
move
on.
What we're going to do is take it under advisement next year.
That's right, exactly.
All in favor?
Yeah. Oh, my God. So anyway.
Well, this is another organization with zero power. And it reminds me of they just had a bunch of protests for what, the World Trade Organization?
Yeah, they always have that stuff. Yeah,
what are these people protesting?
It's kind of a incestuous closed community in a way. You get the UN to show up with the WTO or whatever, and then you get people that have absolutely nothing better to do, the aging 60 hippies and their offspring, and their genetic offspring, out there carrying signs saying power to the people, with capitalism, whatever.
Yeah, but the WTO is a bunch of organizations and people that just get together and agree or disagree on stuff. They have no army. They have no lawmaking power. They have no power, no real power.
No, what they do is...
All they can do is toss around their cash.
Well, you're talking about the World Bank or the WTO?
WTO.
Okay, the WTO, of course, what they do is they ask the offending country to do sanctions.
Right.
When somebody does, quote, dumping, unquote.
Right.
It's a real rubber bandery thing. I mean, it's the United States, of course, is the elephant in the room, and we sometimes move our butts around.
But even so, all we can do, like you said, is ask. They do is get together and they vote and they say, okay, by a vote of 7-2,
we sanction thee.
Right.
We
request that you sanction yourself.
That's right. But they don't call it that. They say we are sanctioning you. And of course,
they're probably providing services is what they call it.
It is interesting when they sit there and they try and control the market when they can't. I look at it as what they call Canutism. This is the religion of Canutism.
Yeah.
They want to hold back the tide. They think they can hold back the tide. I mean, it's just phenomenal. It's doomed to failure, but it's just such a waste. It's such an incredible waste of time. It reminds me of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when they, I forget which thing it was, but they landed on the planet and they found the fellow sitting in the tub. It was all the telephone washers and the useless people of Earth had been shipped off in a bunch of spaceships and had landed on this planet. Did you read that?
No.
Okay. Probably I'm going to do it very briefly.
I saw the movie.
You saw the movie. Well, it was the Golga Frimchen or something like that. Anyway, what happened was the captain of this ship that had crashed on this planet, he explained why they were there. They were waiting for the rest of the people from Earth because there was supposed to be a terrible plague that was going to sweep Earth. So what they did is they built these three giant spaceships. One was for all of the telephone wipers and the people that you would expect are just totally useless. They were all in one ship. All the engineers and scientists in another ship, and all the leaders and politicians in another ship. And as he said, well, we were the first to go. And, you know, surprisingly enough, the rest of them didn't make it off the Earth. And so here we are. We're waiting for them. They're probably going to send help or something. But all they do is have committee meetings on deciding on committee meetings. They just go on and on and on. And it's deciding to decide, getting ready to get ready, and this stuff that they have, what's the shape of the table kind of stuff. You know, is it round, square, oval? And they have set up a committee on that. And the irony, of course, was that the Earth was wiped out by a virus spread on telephones. So, but again, that is, if you get a chance, it's really funny. That is, what's his name, Doug Adams, God rest his soul, read, it was like the third and final book in the, it was a trilogy, I think it was. Anyway, okay, moving on. The next thing I've got here, this is from Jimmy's hometown. We're coming up on 4 o'clock. We're going to take a break here in a minute. You want to take
Sure.
Let me just...
top of the hour?
Top of the hour, we'll take a break. The last week, this is the National Mall. Did I talk about this a minute ago?
Well, we mentioned it. We mentioned we were going to talk about it.
Okay, good. National Mall morphing into a monument of monstrosity. This is not the shopping mall. This is the mall between the Capitol. I think it's between the Capitol and the Washington Monument. It has on there the Lincoln Memorial and the Jefferson Memorial, I think, is down there. And, of course, they got the reflecting pool. And this is where people gather to do that. I think
urinate,
right. They don't have many homeless like they do on our mall. Down here we have homeless people in Gainesville on our mall.
Yeah.
So I don't think they do that too much there. Although they do across the street in Lafayette Park. They have a lot of that stuff. Anyway, the deal is that they are putting more and more monuments on the mall. They have the Vietnam's veteran, I guess, is up. But the reason for this particular story on the 24th was this is the proposed memorial for Martin Luther King Jr. The planners hadn't even obtained the permits yet for this monument. The event was more of a fundraiser than a groundbreaking. Apparently, they've got a spot for it, but they don't have the permits. They don't have the design. They got nothing, but they broke ground.
Well, we thought we'd break ground right here in front of the White House.
It's on the mall. But the deal is that
we call it the Black House.
Across from the White House.
Right.
So cute.
It's like the Taj Mahal and the...
Only in reverse.
Right.
The Taj Mahal.
Right. Well, you know the Taj Mahal... Well, I won't give the history. There was originally going to be a black Taj Mahal right across from it.
Oh, really?
And then, well, the word Taj Mahal means white house or white mausoleum, basically.
No.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
No, it does. Taj is the building and Mahal is the color. And so there was going to be
I did not know.
There's going to be a Taj, whatever the word is for black over there.
Taj noir.
Right, right. But this is our tribute to that.
There was also something else about that they were, it wasn't supposed to get built or was supposed to fall down or something. Okay, don't forget it. Okay. Anyway, the planners hadn't changed the room and so forth and so on. The problem is, of course, that there's like 30 other little things. Everybody wants to get their thing in here on the mall.
I bet they do.
No, seriously. And of course, as they say, I'm going to read you bits and pieces that tell you so much about this. The mall is quickly turning into kind of a kitschy amusement park for aggrieved parties and special interests.
Kitsch is what, yeah. I mean, you're talking about. Yeah, it's like it's going to be like a carnival.
Right. But with everybody's get their thing. Of course, Congress, not to be outdone, is spending. They approved a taxpayer $500 million Congressional Visitor Center on the mall to celebrate the works of Congress. It is now 3 years and tens of millions of dollars behind the scheduled completion. I mean, what does this tell you?
$500 million
for Congress to celebrate its own accomplishments, of which one is we can't get anything done.
We can't even get this museum built.
This, if you get a chance, if you must do this, and we're going to take a break, and I'm going to continue this because we're at the end of our first hour here. But I want to continue on this particular thing because it's really a fantastic comment on us here in the United States. But if you do, go to Jimmy Doan's site and go to our books. And then what you do is you go to Amazon, and the book is called Parkinson's Law. This is required reading for all Jimmy Doan listeners. The book has been out of print for 30 years.
It's only 150 pages, something, right?
It's a thin, easy read. It's a comedy, but it is tongue-in-cheek. C. Northcote Parkinson wrote this book, started writing it in 1955, and refined it until about 1970. He only recently died, like 10, 15 years ago. I didn't even in his 80s. I mean, I could have met the guy, and I'm disappointed I didn't. But the book is a religious experience for Jimmy. And I can so you'll have to get it. Unfortunately, Jimmy won't get any credit on Amazon for this, I don't think, because you'll have to go and you'll pay like $3 plus shipping. Worth twice that. Worth 10 times that. And let me tell you, the money that you would have spent on this book because of the religious experience, don't forget to go to the donation and donate to Jimmy's Caribbean retirement. No, I'm sorry, to the expert.
Studio bolstering.
Studio bolstering stuff. That's right. So we're going to take a break here for a moment, and we will, let's see if I got some, let me see if I can find some music. Okay, hold on. Don't run off yet. You can keep talking until I find, I'm going to put on Lather.
Everybody wants to be a star. Flash, flame, photography don't show us what we really are. Without a net under the tightrope, but the wind is blowing. And it's something in your window, giving us the details we didn't even want to know. Yes, sir, I'm QT. I'm the craze of my native street. When I start to dance, everything goes shake, 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 shake. This señorita stays.
Okay, I think we're back.
Back with Desi.
Back with Desi, that's right.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Well, he's from Cuba, of course, and Fidel, of course, is in the terminal, they said.
Really?
I heard he was terminal.
He's not going to make it.
He's not going to make it. He's not going to come back anymore.
Wow.
So a lot of people are preparing for the
vacation.
That's it. Go down there. We'll have some fun with that. So let me see if I can turn this thing off. Hold on a second, everybody. There we go. Okay. So where I was, National Mall. This, one of the things that is talked about in Parkinson's book is how great societies, great empires, you can tell when they're on the way out by the number and quantity and stupendousness of their monuments. Seriously, Rome, all the major monuments, same with Greece, all built at in time of decline. One that he brings up the most is Versailles, which was the swan song for Après-moi le déluge, which in fact happened. Versailles, fantastic, unbelievable, and bankrupted the country. And this, seriously, this, and, yeah. And so you can tell that, and he goes through the whole litany of this. He talks about from the very beginning when, and same thing with companies. Companies start off with, they're very busy. They start off in a warehouse. They're running around. There's papers everywhere. No organization.
When they build their giant building.
The edifice to history or whatever. And then that's
And football teams, too. As soon as you build your 100,000-person stadium.
Boom.
Your program's on the way out.
Program's on the way out. And that, of course, brings up a whole other thing that we're not going to talk about today. So anyway, the mall, I thought this was an interesting article because it was not an opinion piece. This was by the reporter. And you don't see this very often in reporting from the MSM, from the mainstream media. The mall in many ways represents a tidy symbol of what's happened to the federal government over the last half century. All the more appropriate given that it's owned by the federal government and lies between Capitol and the White House. Economists frequently talk about the problem of concentrated benefits with diffuse costs. Select groups of people with a strong interest in, for example, a federal subsidy can come to Washington and wield quite a bit of clout. Few will object because, say, a $250 million subsidy to cranberry farmers doesn't match the average taxpayer. The other deal is the federal government grows bloated, and because everybody does this at $250 million, this is the death by a thousand nicks. And finally, the taxpayer does begin to feel it, as we have, since it's roughly 40%. Well, the federal government eats up about a little over 20% of GNP at this point. The federal government grows bloated, and taxpayers do begin to feel the pinch. Of course, Congress won't actually eliminate any of these programs for the same reason that they started them. Each small, powerful interest group getting the benefits has much more incentive to punish lawmakers who cross them than does the average taxpayer footing the bill. And Jimmy's talked about this many times previously. This is the small vocal minority outweighing the needs or the benefits to society in general. And you can always...
The great silent majority.
That's right. So it's much like what happened on the National Mall. When Vietnam veterans groups first approached Congress about a memorial, who, after all the sacrifices they made, could possibly tell them no? It's an apt metaphor in a way. Franklin Roosevelt, when they approached him before he died, they said, well, we're going to put up a monument because you were here and we love you and so forth. He says, well, the monument to me should be no bigger than my desk. And, of course, it is a sprawling, expansive, unwieldy attempt to capture his legacy, as they call it here. And it's a metaphor for what happened to federal government under and since Roosevelt time.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is an article written by a reporter. I thought this is fascinating. I'm surprised that somebody didn't take this guy to task. The World War II memorial rushed to completion after badgering from big swingers like Tom Hanks and Bob Dole is a clunky checklist attempt at a memorial that overwhelms with an assault of fountains, flags, plaques, and concrete. It looks as if its designers didn't want to offend anyone by omission, so they erred on the side of including everything, and the italics are in the article. Every state, every subgroup of soldier, every military branch, every theater, and every country gets a pillar, a fountain, a flag, or a plaque. Simple and elegant, it isn't. Then there's the National Museum of the American Indian, a hulking chunk of concrete, a stone's throw from the U.S. Capitol, that upon opening was universally panned. None of this is to say that the groups aren't worthy of commemoration or some sort of recognition, but the debacle that has become the National Mall does demonstrate just how difficult it is for the federal government to say no when interest groups, especially sympathetic ones,
come calling. Before it's all over, it's going to be cotton candy and...
Hey, I'm sure it already
dunking
is.
Dunking booths.
Well, that's right. And maybe a Ferris wheel or something. No, I mean, I'm sure already, if we've been up there, and they have. What's the problem here? Have we got a mix problem here that I don't know about?
See, now everybody gets to participate in the mixing
process. That's right. That's because we don't have the womp engineer by, you know. Okay, that's it. I'm going to fire him. That's all there is to it.
Dock his pay.
That's right. Dock his pay. I had some more to say on that, but I'm done and I forgot what it was. So let's move on to the elderly driver who killed 10.
Okay. I have been waiting for this.
Okay, good.
I will be the first one to say I was actually slightly inaccurate in my prediction on how this would end up. Okay. The original story was a Santa Monica man turns onto a street that he's familiar with. But it's a street
like 89 years old.
Right, he's 86 at the time, mm-hmm. and then he 86'd a bunch of people.
It's appropriate,
right? And down the street. But the problem was that they had set up a farmer's market there, and he didn't know about it. It's normally not a farmer's market, but they closed it off for the weekend or whatever. And here's this guy, makes the wrong turn, and instead of the brake, he hits the gas. Okay, there's no criminal intent here at all. Everybody will tell you that it was a pure accident. Okay.
Killed
10 people and injured another dozen or more.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of those deaths these days in the United States, if somebody's dead, somebody's going to jail.
Somebody's going to pay.
Exactly. That's right. The way everybody's idea is. It's just somebody's got to pay for that. There's
if anybody dies, it's a victim.
Right. That's right. It's amazing. But the accidents have been completely ruled out and there's no such thing as an accident.
No such thing. That's right.
So the guy got convicted on 10 counts of involuntary manslaughter.
Okay.
And so he would have spent decades in prison. Okay. He would have.
I don't think so. Not at 86.
No. That's exactly what saved him. He was saved by death. It turns out, anyway, he didn't die, but he is literally on his deathbed.
Okay.
I mean, he literally...
Oxygen or anything.
Exactly. Oxygen couldn't even come to court to receive the tongue lashing that the judge gave him.
Right.
And... so the judge, instead of sending him to prison where he surely would have died quickly because they don't have a bunch of medical stuff in prison.
Well, they could have sued them, sued the prison and got money for malpractice.
I doubt it, but you could try. But so anyway, instead of sending him to prison forever, They just gave him probation.
Okay.
Okay. So
now, then, the relatives of the people who died are upset about this.
Well,
right?
And of course they would be. You have to remember, anytime somebody dies, all their relatives want revenge. Revenge is a natural human thing. It comes into mind, and you want revenge. You want somebody to be responsible. Number one, you don't want it to be an accident because you want there to be some meaning behind the whole thing.
Right.
If it's an accident, then it was God. And that's inexplicable and uncompassionate. God can't just kill somebody by accident.
No,
he's got to have a reason.
Well, of course he does, but we don't know what it is. But
right.
But it must be good.
It must be. And so what they say is, well, no, it was the devil that did it.
I see.
This person drove intentionally. And they warped this guy's statements all around. For example, it was quoted that he said after the accident, after he got out of the car and everything,
he said, "The body still laying on his
bodies
windshield.
Bodies everywhere. Massive destruction.
Destruction. Bones.
And he says, at least among other things, he says, why didn't you guys get out of my way?
Right.
Okay. Now, the judge interpreted this as in the worst way possible, which
callous.
Is right. Like this callous, total callous. I can imagine exactly how he would have said this compassionately. Okay. He gets out of the car. He's absolutely hysterical at this
Devastated.
Point. Okay. Yeah. I mean, he's obviously run over a bunch of people. He knows it. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And what can his mind conceive of?
He drops to his knees and he says, why didn't you get out of the way?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Okay.
And the judge says, callous indifference.
Callous. Yeah. You know, incredible, but you know, I can't believe you would make these statements, blah, blah, blah. There were a couple of things that he said like that. Oh, for example, it was reported that he veered around the object.
Yeah, no, that was something that I was curious about.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Really?
You're driving in the car, okay? There's two things in front of you. There's mobile people who can get out of the way, and there's solid objects, okay? Are you going to slam into a solid
That's
object?
That's true. Well,
no, your instinct as a driver is to avoid stuff. You know, so he's trying to avoid stuff. He's avoiding the things that aren't moving.
Right.
And there's people that are still in the way. Now, this is a crowded farmer's market. There's lots of people around there. He
right.
didn't kill them all. He just killed a few. So, it just makes sense as to how that would have happened.
I see.
But the judge came down on him hard in words, but not in deeds. He didn't give
him. Said he should have hit the stationary object instead of the people.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, of course, you know, if a stationary object had been like a nursery set up there for the people at the farmer's market,
right, yeah.
Then they would have said, well, he intentionally hit the nursery.
That's
you know?
Right. It was a stationary bus full of nuns.
Exactly. You
That's
know,
right.
they would have said, why did he veer into the bus full of nuns?
That's
and,
right.
And of course, he would have said, well, to stop the car. And they would have said, look, he was just concerned about stopping the car or something.
Yeah,
I mean, whatever it was.
Can do no right.
Right, exactly. He could do no right because of all the dead people. And it's really unfortunate. But I'm relieved that he's not going to prison for the rest of his very short life from here. He's now 89. And
well, I did see that the prosecutor said, what, justice was served? Is that what the prosecutor said?
No. The prosecutor wanted him to cook, to burn.
Burn in hell.
Yeah, but death penalty. I mean, if they could have given him a death penalty, they would have.
Now, let me ask you this. Was this a jury trial or not?
Yes.
Okay, and so the jury came back and said guilty.
Right. But you have to remember that the standard has been changed to this point. It's been lowered so much that now...
The instruction to the jury was you've got to convict?
Exactly.
Okay.
The instruction to the jury is basically like, this guy didn't have to mean to do anything wrong if he meant to drive.
Right.
The only intent is whether or not he was driving.
Well, I'm surprised that the defense attorney didn't come up with some kind of really good closing thing. I mean, attorney said, look, it's obviously an accident. We shouldn't
right.
even be here.
And that's what he did say. And what they say is, nah.
And as long as we're here.
Right.
That's right. Let's go to deliberation for, what kind of food are we getting? Is that
right.
lobster tonight? We're gonna
deliberate till after dinner.
That's right.
And you got to figure that these jury members probably saw family member after family member take this stand and cry.
It says during the trial, the judge said, I saw something I've never seen in my life. I saw a police officer crying on the witness stand.
Oh,
never seen it. Now, that has got to be.
Well, it's rare. I'll give you that.
The jury saw it, of course.
Right. And what they obviously saw was, you know, this horrendous wrong, all these people dead, and they're going to convict. I mean, that's on a thing like involuntary manslaughter.
Mm.
Like, yeah, it was involuntary. I mean, it was involuntary, but
right.
it was manslaughter because
yeah.
the man got slaughtered.
Right.
The point is that they really need to put intent back into
the
crime.
Well, what gets me about this, of course, is the judge ordered a little over $100,000 in restitution and fines.
Yeah, I'm surprised it wasn't a couple million.
Well, I know, but I'm saying that for 10 people dead, at $57,500 in restitution, that's $5,700 each. What? That's no money.
Yeah, they had to. There are specific things they have to prove to get the restitution, and the defense attorney must have done a good job on those
things.
They
must have, yeah.
And those people can still sue in civil court. They can still go back after the guy for millions of dollars.
I thought you said this was civil.
No. That's criminal court.
Okay.
Criminal court.
Okay.
And so, the civil court I was talking about before was Department of Controlling Families.
Okay.
I'm happy that he's not getting prison because there are accidents, and this was one of them. Tragic though it was, he doesn't deserve prison.
And of course this brings up the simple fact is life is not fair. Fair does not. I'm continually amazed how people talk about fairness as regards to nature, for instance. I mean, life is part of nature. Animals, is it fair that the lion eats the elk or whatever? I mean, that wouldn't work. There's no lions and elks in the same. But buffalo, whatever, water buffalo, yeah, whatever. Alligator eats something. Yeah, I mean, it's not life. The word fair does not occur in the same book as life.
Fair. No, I mean, it's.
And so this is what people try and attribute.
Fair is a subset of life is basically what it is.
Well, yeah, I guess. But fairness is only a human attribute. Only that it only applies with humans. Nobody else. I mean, there's no such thing as fairness anyplace else except with humans. It doesn't exist. I mean, it's something that we do only for ourselves.
Yeah, well, it makes sense.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, moving on.
Yep.
Panel calls for big changes in Medicaid. Now, Jimmy has talked about this many times, that people don't realize anybody under 40 is not going to see a dime of Social Security that means anything. They might get a check, but it won't pay for a loaf of bread. Medicaid, however, is even a bigger problem in unfunded liability. And one of the things that people listening to this show need to realize, it is, you're not going to see that either. The idea that we can live at the expense of everybody else, that you're going to get taken care of, that Medicaid or even insurance, this is the big thing that the Teddy Kennedy wing of the Democratic Party wants to do, is they say there's 44 million uninsured. Insurance is not health care. And it turns out that health care is not health care. And this is what is coming on in Medicaid. They are realizing, prior to the thing actually going broke, that they are way overextended. So they're going to make changes in Medicaid. What you've been promised, and this, I don't know how to put this exactly, but when the government promises you something, you don't get to take that to the bank. That is worthless. That is less than worthless. It is astounding to me how many people think that the government can cure a problem when, in fact, they create the problem and then they don't follow through. You're not going to get what you think you're going to get across the board. And this is a perfect example of that. The changes that they're calling for in Medicaid are basically, since they don't have the money, to restrict what you can do with it. Essentially, Medicaid is going to devolve into something where maybe you can get your nails done.
And everybody can get their nails done.
There'll be a 10-month waiting list, but you'll be able to get your nails done. The rest of it, forget it. And there'll be the occasional, one in a million heart transplant. It'll be like the lottery. The deal, let me just mention here, a federal advisory panel says that long-term care for aging baby boomers threatens to bankrupt Medicaid. It's not only threatened, it's going to bankrupt it. It recommends sweeping changes to rein in costs, including greater use of managed care for the sickest Medicaid recipients. The panel, known as the Medicaid Commission, says states should have more freedom to alter benefits and eligibility for the program, which serves more than 50 million low-income
people. This is the biggest pie of goo that they have got their fingers into.
It is unbelievable. And do you think that there's going to be any special interest stuff? Do you think that people... This goes right back to the story we were just talking about. The voice of who's going to take over the thing, the pharmacy. People are going to talk about the pharmacy or the doctors or whoever it is. The special interests are going to weigh in on this and get their way because of the law. And because they're distorting the market. They are removing people from the market. And then they don't understand why the market doesn't work. I mean, it's astounding to me that the anticipated cost, it says here, threaten the future sustainability. Well, we knew this going in. We knew when you passed it, this going in. This was 4,000 pages of total mischief. And it was a sop to all of the special interests you can imagine. Earmarks have nothing on this Medicaid thing. So let me just continue here. What amazing is to me is what one of the things that is currently with Medicare, I think, if a doctor accepts Medicare money, it is a SWAT team criminal shooting electrocution offense to accept
all at the same time.
At the same time, to accept private money to do stuff. If you walk into the doctor who's an oncologist or whatever, I don't know, and he happens to accept Medicare money, and you say, look, doc, I'm going to give you a couple $1,000 to help me out on this.
A little extra,
right. And you can they
tip.
A tip, right. That's right. Yeah, buy Intel. Okay. It's a losing guy in the fourth. Okay. That's the tip. So anyway, the deal is that is a criminal offense. I mean, everybody goes to jail on that. They want to do with this particular thing, though, the managed care.
This is President Hillary's baby.
Exactly. Well, and she has already said, didn't get it in 93. Here it is, 17 years, 14 years later. We're going to get it. We're going to put the socialized health care in place now. No, I mean, it's coming.
What they don't realize is that health care is actually doctors.
Yes.
Which means it's people.
Right.
Which means if you're going to offer everybody health care, then what you're really doing is you're offering all these doctor services.
Right.
You're giving away these doctor services.
Well, actually, somebody has to pay for it, of course. But
I bet you they cap all the wages.
No, they're going to cap the payments. No, we already know that. And of course, that's already a huge, huge scandal. What they do is because regulations, breed regulations, just worse than rabbits. You can't imagine.
Like Mickey's broom.
Like Mickey's broom. The deal is that they code everything. So obviously there's something called upcoding. You walk in and somebody removes a mole, they call it a precancerous tumor.
Right.
They upcode everything in order to get the money. And of course they're all playing this little charade game. And so they'll come back and they say, well, it wasn't a precancerous tumor. It was a pre-precancerous
right.
tumor. And
we're
only going to give you half the money, but it's more money than you would have gotten for a wart
right.
or a blemish. But it's like a little, it's a kabuki.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's astounding to me that people put up with this, except of all the money that's involved.
Well, look, let's face it. Let's just cut to the chase on this. When Roosevelt ushered in all of these regulations, he really paved the way, which is still growing.
Still growing.
And expanding.
That's right.
And it's basically that every American has accepted the idea, except the libertarians, the idea that a great government program, a great government regulation of an industry, is the way to go.
Well, because they phrase it rather nicely, they call it free. It's free health care. It's free education.
It's a right.
It's a right. The deal is how it is astounding to watch how benefits morph within 12 months, usually, into entitlements. Something that is a one-shot deal becomes permanent very quickly. Very quickly becomes we have a right to cable TV, for instance. I mean, no, seriously, it's a right. If you try and cut off somebody.
And what about your bullshit, too? No. Because the fact is that if we had an open competition, open market, there would be several cable companies, and then we really would have a right
well,
to choose.
Exactly.
To choose.
Well, I remember, to digress just for a moment on that particular subject, and actually this pertains to the whole thing about the market, down where you used to live, on Wesson.
Oh, right.
They made a mistake.
Yes.
They made a mistake. What they did is, when they allowed the franchise for Oviedo versus Castleberry or whatever, they accidentally gave the same street to two companies, to Warner and
half
to,
the street, one side
yeah,
of the
one
street.
Side, that's what I mean. The cables ran down the side of the street, so it is so
on one side of the street you could have two cable.
You could
companies.
Have. You had a choice,
right?
And the rates were
on the other side of the street, our side of the street. You could only have one cable.
You could
company.
Only have one, and you literally. The rates were half.
The rates for our neighbor across the street were half price.
Half price because of competition. I mean, just and one of the things that they tell you is, and one of these days we're going to talk about this, so Jimmy should probably write an essay on this, has to do with something called a natural monopoly, which I think can be dispensed with. It has to do with how much does it cost to run all those extra cables. If you allow all the cable companies in here, you're going to have 10 cables running down the road, and they'll be digging up all the time and so forth and so on. And what a waste when you can just put one cable down there. We'll franchise it. We'll regulate it. And everybody will pay the same nice low price.
Everybody will benefit.
Everybody will benefit.
You don't need Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah, exactly.
You just need Coke.
That's right. And they do that in socialist countries, and you see what happens. You end up with the Trabat. Did you ever see a Trabat?
No, what's that?
A Trabat, it was the car that they made in Russia. And it was the worst.
Is this a Tucker torpedo?
No. Oh, you wish. Oh, luxury. Luxury. The Tucker torpedo would have been luxury. No, this was a belch fire, four-banger, smoke unbelievable, falls apart. A Yugo was a luxury vehicle compared to the Trabant. But it was typical of one size fits all. And yeah, and the waiting list was years. Now, this is the same thing here. I mean, it was 4 or 5 years to get a car in Russia in those days. Now, the same thing is here. It says here, Grace Marie Turner, a commission member, said people who rely on both Medicaid and Medicare are the most vulnerable beneficiaries, but in most cases, nobody is coordinating their care. Even if a state wants to place them in managed care, it may take months or years to get federal approval. Now, I mean, this tells you all you need to know.
Within 100 years, we'll get you on that list.
And you may be dead.
Now, I mean, seriously. I would like, if any of our Canuck listeners are up there, any from Canada or any other country with socialized medicine, if you would write in a very brief thing telling us if there's any lines. If you've ever had any medical things that you've had to apply.
No, tell us what's good about your system.
Yeah, tell us what's good.
I want to hear what's good about it. I want to hear the nice things that you've been able to go in and get that heart transplant within 20 minutes or the liposuction. And, of course, this brings up, I say liposuction, this brings up, there is competition in the things that are off Medicaid. Laser eye surgery and cosmetic medicine. And you find you can go in and get that done instantaneously. I don't know if you call it reasonable or not. Price-wise, but people are, you know, there are lots of people in the business. I mean, let me put it this way. There are the full-page ads for LASIK eye surgery in the newspaper rival those of the attorneys.
Wow.
Yeah, although 12% of our local telephone book is attorneys' ads. I noticed that of the yellow pages.
That's it?
Only 12%.
Yeah, we're going to open up a practice up here.
Yeah, right, exactly. So the panel urged the Bush administration to study a novel idea. This is a novel idea. This is what gets me about this. The commission says, okay, here, increase federal subsidies for low-income groups added to the Medicaid rolls while scaling back subsidies for higher-income people added to the program. This would help achieve Medicaid's core purpose of serving low-income people. Progressive taxation and Medicaid. I mean, it's not enough.
Well,
it never ends. Rich pay for the poor.
I'm going to tell you right now, that is going to be the solution that they do implement within 20 years. I'm giving
it 20. No, no.
12.
No, no. Max 12. I mean, you are so safe. You wimp. I'm giving you 5. 12 years.
I'm telling you,
100 years.
What they're going to do is they're going to hack up. If you've got money, you're out of Medicaid and you're out of Social Security. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's the only
they're already
solution.
Talking about, they are seriously talking about, you know, raising the wage cap again, as you know, on Social Security. As you know, if you make more than $96,000 after that, you don't pay Social Security. Did you know that? It used to be in the old days. It was like when I was growing up, it was like $2,000 or $3,000.
Right.
You paid Social Security on the first $2,000 or $3,000. And after that, if you made more than that, you didn't pay anymore.
Yeah.
Now it's up to 96. They want unlimited.
It's going to be unlimited.
So you're going to pay 15% to Social Security. If you make $10 million, it's going to be a 15% tax increase. Well, not quite, but it's going to be a bunch. Especially for rich people, it's going to be almost 15%. But that's it. It's socialism. It is creeping socialism. But I'll tell you, it's getting up off its knees, and it's going and it's getting ready to make the run for it. And if you think anything's different,
it's growing legs.
No, it is. Absolutely. It is coming out of the tadpole, putting the legs on, and it's going to be hopping like crazy here real soon. How many more metaphors can I use on that? Was there something else that I wanted to say on that?
That's all on that
That's
subject.
All. Okay. So the other thing I wanted to mention, I'm going to move in now to the New York Library officials. This is the New York Public Library. The title of this is New York Library Officials Pay ? Be quiet. The reason is this has always told me this. I've always mentioned this before, at least once before on the Jimmy Doan. Always mentioned at least once. Then the Jimmy Doan show that nonprofit organizations, I think, are anathema. They are. I hate nonprofits. I think that they should be eliminated. I don't think there should be such a thing as somebody who doesn't pay, who doesn't have some skin in the game. A nonprofit are people that get away without paying taxes.
Well, what about a charity or something?
No. You're in it for the. If you don't make any money, you don't pay any taxes anyway. If you have a business that breaks even, if you don't make a profit, then you don't pay. But I say, the way the nonprofits is, they codify this. They say, you don't make a profit even if you do. So the question is,
they've expanded that remarkably in the last few decades. I mean, all the churches and everything, and this is one, I guess, huh?
This is one. The New York, the library, what happens is, since you're not allowed to make a profit, you have to spend the money. Gosh, where would the money get spent? Here it is. What happened was the New York Library was in trouble. They had to have a city bailout of several million dollars for just a couple years ago. Now, of course, they're looking and they say...
Don't they have any books on finance in there or anything?
I would guess. But during the library's most recent federal tax filing shows the total compensation for Paul LeClerc, the library's chief executive, had increased to more than $800,000, a jump of more than $221,000 in 1 year.
Well, look. That is a complicated filing system. And those people have to put those books back after you take them off the shelf?
Yeah.
And so, 800,000? Hey.
Peanuts. Okay, one of the newcomers, they hired three more officers who were paid substantially more than the people they replaced. One of the newcomers, David Ferrario, a director and chief executive of the institution's research libraries, received $349,000, nearly $118,000 more than his predecessor. Susan Kent received $302,000. About 60,000 more than her predecessor, and Catherine somebody or another, 322,000 more, 90,000 more than the predecessor. The Mr. Butler, who was the chairman of the library's board through 2004, said in a telephone interview last week that the increases for the officers were necessary to bring the library in line with comparable nonprofit organizations that budgets of the same size. Yada,
those
yada,
other people
yada,
are spending that much on their people.
What I find interesting, so often this happens all the
you
time.
You have to lure good quality nonprofit organizers from other NBOs.
That's later in this article. Yes, no, I was just getting to that. But it was amazing of all the people that declined to be interviewed. No, we're not going to do that. No, we're not going to talk about it. It says here, we're not going to talk about it. Yorker said someone declined to be interviewed. And attract and retain top flight people, it says right here, as you just mentioned. But they don't want to talk about it. And they, as for the new compensation package for Dr. LeClerc, he's the guy that made the 800 and some. But also he gets, you know, housing and all that other good stuff. While we're certainly watching every single penny, we thought he was worth the increase. The board thinks he has done a simply fantastic job, and we don't want to lose him.
Fantastical.
Well, of course, Dr. LeClerc comes from his position at the library from the presidency of Hunter College. His responsibilities, get this, the compensation package, of course, was also justified, if you want to call it that, or concurrently...
Rationalized.
Rationalized by a paid consultant. Now, let me ask you what consultants do. You go out, and they do this all the time here in Gainesville. They say, gosh, I wonder if we should raise the taxes or we should build
our own wages.
Our own wages, right. So what we're going to do is, in order to take it out of our hands, make it look completely transparent, we're going to go to hire this consultant from South Florida, Billy Bob's consultant place, and we're going to ask him, gosh, do you think we deserve more wages? Now, question. Do you think that Billy Bob...
If he wants to be hired again.
Do you think? No, any place. I mean, the simple fact is, you talk about a blackball situation. Can you imagine if he did it in City of Gainesville, said, you know, nah, you guys are getting plenty. They would be hired any place in the United States.
No.
No, no. You would be out of business. You bid, you make the recommendation to what these people want. I remember when they did the Ironwood golf course here. It was 200 or 300 pages. I'll never forget. I was at a Rotary meeting, and the guy stood up there, and he said, here we have it. They paid $100,000, so this was like 10 years, 15 years ago. They're still in hock over there. We are still it was supposed to be profitable within 1 year. No problem. The consultant said it'll be profitable in 1 year. This is 10 years later. We are still subsidizing. It is still on absolute life support. And you go down and you talk to the city about this and they say, no, these things take time. But you say, we're not really subsidizing it. It's just we're paying extra. So anyway, the deal is that what I find interesting about this is that Dr. LeClerc came to his position at the library from the presidency of Hunter College. His responsibilities include negotiating the city's contribution to the library budget. Surprise, surprise. Part of his job. Am I doing all right now? No, there's something going on with my microphone, eh? Great. You can talk.
Just keep talking.
Okay, I'm talking. Anyway, the deal is, I thought this was fascinating, that part of his duty is to get the money from the city. I mean, how can I explain this? He is begging for his own, and the board of directors and the consultants say he's doing a great job.
And so, naturally.
And so anyway, he also received $136,000 in housing allowance.
Oh,
so Mr. Butler said that Dr. LeClerc and other officers of the library had recently received further enhancements to their compensation, but he would not reveal what they were. Dr. Leclerc, anyway, would feel fine. The compensation committee, new committee, the compensation committee unanimously approved a new 5-year deal. So he's in for another 4. This reminds me a little bit of the board of directors at Enron or someplace like that.
You want to hop over to your mic?
Yes, I can do that. Good plan.
Okay, so the deal is, am I coming through okay?
Yeah,
okay,
great.
Okay, good. So anyway, Little has said the information about the negotiations of the hirings, little information, it says, is made readily available to the public or to the library's many donors. And one of the guys says, obviously there's a certain degree of vagueness within these parameters. The city pays over $100 million a year to the library. So the taxpayers, I mean, this is phenomenal to me.
And that brings up our local issue here with the condos.
Yes, exactly. Let me just go through and get this, by God. You know, you are good at this. Here we are. This is locally here.
Locally. Probably happening in your community, too.
Probably happening
in America.
Well, what they do is, and I wrote them a letter. Oh, I was published, by the way, today in the Gainesville Sun.
Hey!
Yeah, it had to do with the...
Under your pseudonym?
Yes, under my pseudonym, right. Alternate Jimmy Doan. The city has an incentive program because they're worried about downtown collapsing. So they have an incentive program to bring businesses downtown. And they, what they've done, as typical, they have put out a little guideline for somebody that builds a edifice downtown, usually residential and commercial downtown, that's supposed to enhance downtown. They have a checklist that you can get a tax rebate. So it turns out that the people that are going to put anything down there, it turns out this particular one would have gone ahead and done it anyway, but they satisfy the checklist. And my philosophy is, if you put money up for grabs, somebody's going to grab it. Exactly. So they went through, when I watched some of this on our local channel 12 here, and it turns out that the city, for some reason, has decided that they want to be in the profit assurance business. There are several projects that were brought that the people that were putting up, and they're spending like tens and tens of millions of dollars on some of these projects. I mean, upwards of 33 million for some of these projects. The condos in this particular thing are going for $240,000 each.
And it is an $11 million project, $240,000 condos.
Yeah, and so they're going to get... Now, I will say this, that the tax rebate that they're getting is minuscule. It's not much.
It's $1 million.
It's 10%. But it's over 15 years. So, I mean, when you do a net present value, it's not that much. It's the principal thing.
Well, yeah.
The reason is, they had to vote for it. I thought it was interesting. The commission voted for it. I went with city. Yeah, it was city. So the vote was like 5-1 or 4-1 or something, even though there's 7 people on the commission. There, a couple of people weren't there or something. The reason is that they satisfied the checklist. The guy sat up there and says, well, you know, the money was here. I mean, you know, it turns out that our project fit your guidelines, and surprise, surprise, we'll take the money as long as it's here.
So the citizens are funding 10% of their...
And of course, what happens is that money has to be made up by moi.
Right.
But they never would reduce the spending by that amount, the city would. They would never say that, oh, by the way, since we're not getting this money, we have to cut back someplace. They would never say that. They say they go out and get more money. In fact, Rodney Long, and that is he city or county? I forget. I think Rodney is on the county, I think. Anyway, the county is all bent out of shape because of the impending homestead exemption doubling, which we talked about, to $100,000, and we're going to lose $12 million. And Rodney's first thought and only thought is, oh, woe is us. We're going to have to diversify and find out where we're going to get the $12 million. No chance that they would want to live within their means. So the same thing occurs here.
I'm telling you, if we pay for 10% of that building, I say we own 10% of it. We get to use their bathrooms or something like that.
We probably do, of course. But I think that what astounds me about this is that a project's incentives are further capped at an amount to be determined the gap, quote, between the cost of the project and the amount needed to make it profitable. And I'm thinking, what business, you know, that's what capital is all about. You take the risk, you get the reward. Well, I got no business. I don't care if the guy's profitable
or not.
This
is a tax giveaway.
Oh, there's no question. And the guy said, who was doing the thing, the project says, we're not
trying to define ourselves as transformational, and that's the key. These projects that are eligible for the tax incentives are supposed to be transformational. That is, they transform downtown into a better place. Well, he said, man, you know, we're not in that, but we just happen to, when you do the checklist, guess what? We are. Let's have the money. And of course, the commissioners, because they had satisfied the checklist, they felt they had no choice but to give the guy the money. And I thought it was interesting that one of the commissioners voted against it anyway. I mean, they followed the law, and the commissioner did a nullification thing. I mean, they could have, I suppose. According to this thing here, it says, regardless of the points, however, commissioners are free to or accept or reject an incentive plan. I don't understand the difference. It says two different things here in the same article. Either you're free to accept or reject it, or you have to go by the checklist. And I would imagine that if somebody really wanted the money, that they would use the one here that says they satisfy the checklist to sue.
Right.
And so my point is, as I've written to these people before, this is Gainesville. It's Florida. We have sunshine here, you know, 390 days a year. You don't need incentives in this town. You let the market do its work. And this I'm going to talk here. We're coming towards the end, so I'm going to talk a little philosophy. One thing that I have sort of something that came up while I was driving around Turkey Day, thinking about Turkey. Okay, this has to do, and maybe Engineer Eric can stick in the Princess Leia soundbite. Let me see if I could continue this metaphor, and maybe you can jump in and help me with this. I had said something on this on the drive, and I've got it on tape somewhere. When you squeeze a balloon, what happens with governments? When you squeeze a balloon, think about it for a second. The balloon bulbs out like between your fingers. It goes out between your fingers, so you have essentially four little balloonettes.
Here it is.
Okay.
The more you tighten your grip, Tuck, the more star systems will slip through your fingers.
Exactly. So here's the deal, and that's more of a water type metaphor, maybe silly putty. If you squeeze, let's say, a ball of silly putty, it squeezes out between your fingers. And of course, this is the market saying, this is when you try and control the ball of silly putty. So the government comes in and says, oh my God, we now have four problems where we only had one before. So now they put new squeezes on those four little balloons that came out, and four more come out on each one. So now you have 16. And what happens is you will end up off this one problem that if you just let the market do its thing, it would have solved itself. But now here you are, one of 32 problems, and they are addressing just the 1/32nd of it instead of going back to the root. And let me give you, this actually goes dovetails with something that is very serious that government does all the time called crowding out. Let me give you another little metaphor. Let's say you're in the corn business and you're growing corn. It takes about 3 months to grow a nice ear of corn. And 2 months into it, people start coming to your farm and they say, well, we want the corn. It's not ready yet. It'll be ready. Don't worry about it. And they say, but we want the corn now. So they go to the government and the government says, you know, we have some corn from last year. We'll supply all the corn you want. So the government supplies all the corn. And guess what? The guy's corn comes to fruition. Nobody wants it. So he's out of business, essentially. So the next year, what happens? People automatically go to the government. The government has created a subsidiary class of people who depend on the government for corn, and the corn guy essentially is out of business or can't make any money. They've crowded him out. If they had just waited another month, then the market would have solved the problem. It would have been no problem. This is a metaphor. Please don't take this exactly the way it's supposed to be. But this is exactly what happens across the board. Very often a problem that if you'll just wait a little while, it'll all be just fine. You don't have to jump in. You don't have to fix it. And when you do fix it, you've created this phenomenal distortion that now you have to fix again. And all too often, when you look at a problem that a government is addressing, you find out that problem was first created. I can tell you...
Here's another one we want to talk about today, which was the minimum wage thing.
That's exactly the minimum wage. This brings up another point. It has been arithmetically, geometrically proven beyond a shadow of a doubt with the precision of any geometric proof that you want to come up with that the minimum wage hurts people. Yeah, well, it hurts the people it's designed to help.
It ought to be called the Job Reduction Act.
Well, it ought to be called Put You Out of Work and Put You in the Breadline Act or something. Starve you. Look, here's something we're going to do at you. We are going to pass. It is called the the starving people kill you off act or something. I mean, it's the most horrible thing you can. It can be proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that the minimum wage law harms exactly the people that it's and everybody else.
The people that it's designed to
help and everybody else. And so my question to the people that are getting ready to do the minimum wage, and I should have asked this downtown here when we have a citywide minimum wage here for people that want to work for the city. I want to ask these legislator people, given this proof, given that we all know that every economist other than Krugman and the socialist people realizes that the minimum wage harms people, what's in it for you? Why are you passing this law? What is in it for you?
It's because the idea that it harms everybody has not been popularized, and therefore
it's not a question of popularizing. I mean, it's a proof. It's a proof like gravity.
What I mean is people don't know the proof. And because they don't know the proof, you can still get away, get up on your grandstand there and say, I'm helping the poor and the elderly and the minimum wage people.
So what's in it for this guy is to stay elected.
Right.
Okay, that's what if they'd say I'm passing this law to stay elected.
Well, I think one step further, I think they can actually believe somehow that the proof is wrong.
It's like global warming, in a way. You know, there's people that are saying, on both sides, that are saying, the proof doesn't exist either way, whatever you want. Maybe not global warming is not a good one, but yes, I see your point that the proof is flawed. The basic premise is flawed. Oh, I see the proof. It was like that. A reminder of that lady that ran the educational system in South Carolina and showed them that at the bottom of the pile, they flunking tests right and left. And that was something else I wanted to talk about today, but we're not going to get to it. They said, well, you know, by every measure you can imagine, you're at the bottom of the list. And she said, we don't use those figures. That doesn't show what we're actually doing. Well, what does? We're not going to tell you. You know, we have our own secret way of determining. Well, I mean, so go ahead. My point is, this again brings up a tired, pithy old adage. And that is, when a person's livelihood or ego depends on a mythology, they go with the mythology every time.
Yeah, all you have to do to realize the fallacy of the minimum wage is imagine what would happen if they passed a maximum wage law.
Well, I have never heard it, speaking along those exact same lines, forget the maximum wage law, but for a moment, I don't want to forget your stuff. No, forget it. I just brought it up. I know. No, the deal is that if $7.58 is so good, what's wrong with $20? And they ask this, well, of course, what people say is, well, ha ha ha, that's ridiculous. Okay, but I've never heard a satisfactory answer to somebody. If you're going to do $7.50, what I would do is say, well, what's wrong with $8 then? Or $9? And then when you jump to $100, they dismiss you out of hand.
Right.
But that it is the same principle.
Well,
No,
they just somebody at one point when you say $9, they say okay, and you say $9.50, they say, well, that's too much.
Yeah, exactly. And who's
as if they know.
As if they know. And of course somebody's gonna make that decision. And at that point it becomes a SWAT team offense can you imagine trying to pay somebody, let's say the minimum wage goes to $7.75, and you want to pay $7.74 and a half. You go to jail.
Yeah.
You go to jail.
Right.
Everybody goes to jail. They send people that look like Palestinian terrorists into your place with armed and dangerous to take you away.
Hit the guns.
That's it. Yeah, hit the guns, Eric. That's right.
Well, yeah. My thought is, look, think about it this way. If you tried to pass, if you passed a maximum wage law, that is, you capped wages at, say, $100 an hour or something, right?
Okay.
Well, what would happen? All people who were paid more than that would get fired, or they would get paid the $100 an hour, and the companies would have money left over.
No.
And they could hire other people they could hire two or three people to do the same job, and therefore you would create some jobs.
Okay, let me tell you though what happens.
Okay.
They have had that before.
Okay.
They have had maximum wage before. Let me tell you exactly what happened and why we're in the mix in the screw up we are today. It started, believe it or not, during the Second World War when they capped wages. In order to attract people, they started offering benefits. Then what they did is said, no, we can't pay you more than, $5 a day, but We'll give you free health care. We'll give you housing allowance. We'll let you drive the car around. We'll let you yada, 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 do on and on and on. We'll let you do all this stuff. That's, you know, these are not wages. Ha, ha, ha. So now these benefits become entitlements. And when you then remove, after the war is over, you remove the wage cap law, the benefits now have become entitlements. They stay in place. And that's what exactly what has created the problem we have today. The health care problem is because companies can deduct it tax-wise, whereas individuals can't. It's ludicrous. It is the most ludicrous thing you can imagine to think that if I want to pay for my own health care, I pay for it with after-tax dollars, and yet if the business does it, it's before tax. There is a perverse, total perverse incentive. And, of course, once you have all this money going into health care, do you doubt for a second that the prices aren't going to rise? They have totally distorted the market because there was, just as you mentioned, good point, a wage cap. So this problem started in 1943, 60-some years ago, and that's what's created the problem. That's how this stuff comes out and distorts the market totally. If they wanted to do it right...
I'd say hard to believe, but it's not.
No, it's not. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because your particular... take on it in that they've tried to do this before. This is called job creation. This is what they do instead of maximum wage laws. What they do is they pass maximum hours laws.
Right.
So they cut, that is with the 40 hour in France and other places. It's a 35 hour work week. And the deal is, look, if you're only allowed to work 35 hours, that extra 5 hours has to go to somebody else. However, that does not explain the 10, 11 and 12% unemployment in all of those countries that have a 35 hour work week. I mean, if that's such a good deal, and here in this country, you can work as many hours now, you have to be paid. That's another thing. You have to be paid overtime, time and a half, illegal, SWAT team will shoot you. You're dead. So I don't know. Well, we're coming here to the end of the show, and we want to remind you to send us email,
Jimmy@JimmyDone.com
or Curtis. Is it Curtis?
I think it's, is it Counselor Curtis?
Counselor Curtis at JimmyDone.com.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I did want to say we want to thank Patty. Yeah, she sent us some more stuff on. I think it was on, I forget. She sent us some pictures. They were good. We didn't use them today. Of course, it's hard to use pictures on this show at this point.
Yep. You can always call as well at 1-866-95-JIMMY.
That's right.
And leave us a message.
That's right. Technically, you're supposed to be able to call here. And we're going to have this, I'm going to try and have this phone thing hitched up next week. I've got a new phone thing that may or may not work because I have decided not to spend the money on the real one that actually I know works. I'm trying to save money. And this is the way Jimmy saves money is he buys about 10 of them at half price and finally ends up with the one that he really needs and dumps it. So that's genetically I'm going to do that. Sorry. So we need to get out of here.
Hey. Well, for our live listeners, if there are any, thanks for tuning in.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll have a complete complement of crew next time.
Yep. Yeah, where is Jack?
We don't know. Jack's been MIA.
MIA, that's right. But I would imagine that Engineer Eric will be here. So it's after 5 and we're out of here. Bye-bye.
Woohoo!
Hey, this is Engineer Eric from the Jimmy Nolan Show. We just got done listening to part 2 of our November 25th podcast. If any of you have ever heard the show before, you realize that Jimmy doesn't stop talking much at all. And now I have a special surprise for you. They got about another 30 minutes worth of bonus tracks to like listen to. So if you need a further Jimmy fix, then download it from JimmyDone.com or your favorite podcast directory. And we'll see you again live this December 2nd on ZTLK. Talk of the Web. Hey, I'm gonna really try, don't you? I'm gonna do something to you now.